Good morning. This is part three, and I think the last part, of our discussion of Gilgulim, which began with a Gemara in Yaakov. began with the Gemara in Yaakov in Sanhedrin, which we will come back to today in our discussion. Yesterday we ended with the Abarbanel, and towards the end of the session, and I was sort of rushed. So I want to go back, and I also said something in the name of the Abarbanel, which was actually someone else. In any event, so back to the Abarbanel. So the Abarbanel is explaining the Ramban in next week's Parsha about the Ramban is found in Parsha Kitetze in the midst of Yibum, and he refers to the Ramban's comment about why Onan did not want to have children. Ramban says it's a secret. And Abarbanel explains, as others did, the secret is that Onan knew that the soul of the child would be the soul of his brother, and he wanted to have a child with a fresh soul. He didn't want to have a child with someone else's soul, and that was cruel on his part because Gilgul is a big chesed that Hashem does. And okay, So the Abarbanel explains it as well. Then the Abarbanel explains how Gilgul works, and that people have different personality types. And if you didn't succeed, if your neshama didn't succeed the first time in one, and the personality type is connected with the body, they spoke about the four biles which cause four different moods and four different temperaments. And so, if a person is born into a body with a bad temperament and he didn't succeed, so we'll give him another chance in a different kind of body. Okay. And I said that was the reason there were four chances, up to three Gilgulim, because there are four types, personality types. And so you're born the first time. If that doesn't work, you get three more chances. Okay. And I said that in the name of the Abarbanel. That wasn't the Abarbanel. That was a contemporary of the Abarbanel called the Minchas Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Chayat, who also was from that generation of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. Okay. We're going to come back to some other things he says.
Is this way too tangential to ask how we're supposed to take the four humors, like how seriously we're supposed to take them, in that they were totally medieval Goyish science? And
So that gets back into the general question of Chazal's relationship with science, and whether they were totally Goyish medieval science, or mm-hmm. whether they have some basis in Nevi'im, that the mm-hmm. Goyim got it from there, mm-hmm. and that and this whole concept of Gilgal is many of the people who didn't believe in it, we said they attributed it to the Greek philosopher Pythagoras, that we know mm-hmm. best mm-hmm. as from a squared plus b squared equals c squared, the Pythagorean theorem. But he actually invented the word philosopher. He was to describe himself, a lover of knowledge, and he was an early Greek philosopher who was so those who didn't believe in it said he made it up, and we took it from him. And those who do believe in it say he talked about it because it's true. Mm-hmm. So So the Abarbanel gives his own reason why there would be three Gilgulim. And he says because there are three different purposes for Gilgul. One is the soul did not complete itself in one life, so it needs to complete itself. A second is that the first is that it completed itself somewhat, but it needs to finish the job. The second is that it sinned, and therefore needs to come back and correct its sin and complete itself. And the third is as a punishment. It's not the same as giving a sinner a chance to work on himself more, okay, but simply as a punishment. So, and he says it's those who say that a person could come back as a dog or some other animal, that would be as a punishment. Then he quoted some of the questions of those who challenge this whole concept, right? And so one of them was, you know, well, that would require a body to have two souls, and whoever heard of a body with two souls? Because the person's born, he has a soul, and another soul comes into him. And second and third questions are very, very similar, which is that the soul is supposed to match the person and match the material that the person is made out of. So that means there would be two identical people in different generations, and that doesn't seem very reasonable. The third one is that if you say that no, it's not like that, but it goes into, you know, the body as it finds it, then that's not fair to the soul. One time it has a good body, you know, a body with lots of potential to succeed. Another time it has a body that doesn't have potential to succeed. It's not very fair to the soul. You're, you know, handicapping it, or you're giving it an advantage. And fifth, he says that if a person is a Gilgal, then why isn't he born knowing everything that his prior neshama knew? And sixth, he says, which body would come back as, which soul would the body come back with at the time of Kesem Esim? Which is a question that some of you asked and many of the Farshim asked. See, these are the objections he quotes from others, and he answers them by saying that several of the questions are answered if we understand what the soul is. Okay? The soul is not some formless existence, you know, looking for a body and then acting like that body. Soul is a spiritual, an actual spiritual existence, and it interacts with the body in it. So just to say, so that answers the first question. It's not that a person's born and then this other thing comes into him. He's born with the neshama that is the Gilgal. Okay, so, but on the other hand, it doesn't have to mean that two people are exactly alike, and it doesn't have to mean he has an advantage or a disadvantage, okay? Because they work together. It's not something that comes into a person and gives it a form. But we did see, incidentally, a few weeks ago, Maral, who did say Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov had a good soul, and Esav had a bad soul, and it does influence the person. And Maral says the same thing about Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was born, God chose Avraham and gave him an extra good soul, so he sort of started his work on a higher plane. Barbanel doesn't seem to hold of that. Okay? Why isn't a baby born knowing everything? Because just like an adult who gets sick or gets old and his body weakens, it affects his intellect. So a baby who's born with no tools to use his intellect and to express his intellect, okay, then he, you know, so it doesn't matter where the soul was before, the baby's going to be a baby. He does say, however, he says, I have absolutely no doubt that if you meet someone who's a child prodigy, it's because he's a Gilgal. And he started out with an advantage. He says, Ein safek, I have absolutely no doubt about this. And as far as the last question, who's going to come back in the future, he says it will be the first body, because that's where the soul was supposed to be, in the first body. It only went into other bodies because it didn't work out in the first body. But where it was supposed to be was the first body. And we left off with a kasha on the Barbanel from, among other places, Gemara in Sukkah. Gemara in Sukkah says that at the time, sometime in the future, there will be seven shepherds and eight princes. And counted among them are Adam, David, and Mashiach. We have a tradition that David was a Gilgal of Adam Rishon, and that Mashiach will be a Gilgal of David. Now, if you say that the only the first body, or for that matter, only the last body, will come back at Chesem Esim, it would be impossible for Adam, David, and Mashiach to exist all at once. So the Radvaz was in the 1500s, maybe one of the... certainly the preeminent Sfardi Posek. He's widely quoted, Ashkenazi poskim as well. There's a Rebbe, either the Rebbe of the Arizal in non-Kabbalistic matters, or the Rebbe of the Arizal's Rebbe. Some say that Rabbi Tzalal Ashkenazi, the author of Shita Mekubetzes, was Arizal's Chavrusa, and some say he was Arizal's Rebbe. Ravaz was a Rebbe of Rabbi Tzalal Ashkenazi, so, and he lived in Egypt. So he says, so we'll just go in order through some of the things he says. First of all, what's the difference between Gilgul and Ibur? Gilgul is, and this is the general understanding, others say the same thing. Gilgul is when, so to speak, the entire soul of a person who died comes back as the primary soul of another person. Ibur is when souls, according to the Radvaz and the Ramchal and many others, are not just one, they're not physical, but you can't imagine them as just one block of something. Souls have infinite number of parts, sometimes referred to as sparks. And that answers the question about Adam, David, and Mashiach. They do have the same soul. However, soul can split itself. Like a candle, we say, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. A candle, the soul is a candle of Hashem. If you light a candle from another candle, it doesn't diminish the first candle. You can light a third candle. You can light an infinite number of candles. It doesn't diminish the first candle. Same thing with the neshama. So Adam, David, and Mashiach have the same neshama. But that doesn't stop the neshama from splitting itself, and all of them will be at Chesem Esim. And similarly, anybody who's a Gilgul, the first body will be at Chesem Esim, and the last body will be at Chesem Esim, and if there were other bodies in between, they'll also be at Chesem Esim, assuming that they deserve Chesem Esim, which is, you know, the. So that's what an Ibur neshama is, that Yitzi asked about. Sometimes, because a person either did a specific mitzvah, so as a reward, he'll get a little spark of someone else's neshama. Someone that mitzvah was very dear to, a gadol, or a navi, somebody who that neshama, that particular mitzvah was very dear to. So Reuven specialized in that mitzvah. Shimon does that mitzvah. A little spark of Reuven's neshama will go into Shimon, either as a reward to make him feel uplifted, or to help him do the mitzvah. So that is the concept of Ibur neshama according to the Radvaz. and others. The Radvaz says we have absolutely no idea exactly how this works, what the calculation, how Gilgul, now back to talking about Gilgul, what are the calculations, why is it used in some cases and not other cases, and how exactly does it work? Okay. We have absolutely no idea. Quotes Pasuk and Daniel, I'm just going through, this is in Sefer Metzudas David, Mitzvah Kuf Chavtes, a mitzvah of Ibur. Just going through, you know, picking out some of the highlights of what he says. Pasuk says regarding Daniel, Vata lech leketz v'tanuach, go to the end and rest. He's telling Daniel that he will not have to come back as a Gilgul. Okay. Why aren't they just judged, rewarded in Gan Eden and Gehenna? What do they need another life for? And what's the point of the Yom Hadina Gadol, the great day of judgment in the end? Okay. So he says that there's some sins that apparently require different kinds of atonement. And he brings our Gemara, the blind man and the lame man, okay, that there are sins that require the neshama and the guf in order to be atoned. They require the neshama and the guf to be together, the way the blind man and the lame man were put together and whipped together in the mashal in our Gemara. Okay. Some sins, it's not the neshama alone cannot be punished. It needs to be joint, and that's, you know, what Hashem knows. And we don't know. Okay, and he says that we mentioned this before. He says as well that this is why sometimes children pass away, who even pre bar mitzvah, they're being punished for something the neshama did in the prior life. Why doesn't a person remember what happened before? So he says because in his what? Why doesn't he remember a prior life? Because I'm sorry.
So that was what with the children.
Yeah.
So the concept sometimes they had something to complete besides the punishment aspect.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. We said, Abarbanel said, there are three purposes for Gilgal. Either coming back to finish the job, right? Or for a tzaddik to come back and finish the job, for a rasha to come back and finish the job, or to be punished. As Abarbanel said that, right? The Radvaz does not say that. Okay. Why doesn't the neshama remember its previous life? So he says that, first of all, memory is a physical function. And second of all, even if it was a function of the neshama, if the neshama could remember its previous life, then it would not have bechira. It would detract from its free choice in this life, and that would defeat the whole point. The fourth question is so we mentioned the contradiction between the Medrash Bahir, Sefer Bahir, Medrash Rabbi Chunya ben Akaneh, who said that Gilgal's for 1,000 generations, and the Pasuk, which Ramban quoted, and everyone after Ramban quotes, that implies, and the Gemara and Yoma, that could be referring to Gilgal, and implies it only happens 3 times. So there are several answers to that. The Radvaz's answer to that is that can happen 3 times in 1,000 generations. You know, so the period in which the Gilgal might happen is sometime in the next 1,000 generations. How many times? 3 times. Okay. He asked, what will happen in time of Chias Amesim? And as I mentioned, he says that the Neshama will split itself he said, therefore, David and Mashiach will be able to coexist. Okay. And he says, seventh question. Okay. What about the new body? If a neshama that sinned in a previous life comes into a new body, and the new body is punished for the sins of the previous life, that's not very fair to the new body. He quotes the Gemara. There's a famous Gemara where someone named Zigud came to testify about someone named Tovia, but he was a lone witness. So to testify by yourself is just lashon hara. And so Zigud was whipped, and Zigud said, "Tovia sinned." Tovia sinned, and Zigud is whipped. So the other body, the previous life, sinned, and the one in this life should be punished. So he answers that the guf has no feelings. Feelings are a function of the neshama. So you can whip the guf as much as you want. It's the neshama that's feeling the pain. And therefore, it's not unfair to the guf. The guf is, just in this context, just a vehicle or receptacle for the neshama. It doesn't feel anything. Yeah. Will women come back in Gilgal? So he says, yes. And a man can come back as a woman. A woman can come back as a man. A man can come back as a man. A woman can come back as a woman. Radvaz says yes. We'll see other opinions about that.
Why would we not have thought women would come back?
We'll see. Well, let's address it right now. On a pshat level, why we would think women would not come back is because we said that the secret of the mitzvah of Yibum is for the soul that died childless. Yibum is only for a man who dies. We don't find a yibum for a woman who dies childless, implying, because it wouldn't do any good because the woman doesn't come back. The Shlach Kadosh says, in Parsha Ki Teitze as well, women, I would say don't tell anyone, but it's going to be recorded. Women perfect themselves the first time. Okay. A woman's trials in life are very different than a man's trials in life. And the women get it right the first time. They don't need to come back as a go-go. It's only us men who keep messing up who need to keep coming back. So what about the idea that you go to every Sheva Brachas and they tell you the man and the woman have the same neshama? It's true. The woman came back, but not because she needed to. She came back because that obnoxious husband made her come back so he could marry her again. And he says that's the reason why shiduchim are often so difficult. It's because the woman's neshama is mad that she got dragged into this world to marry this guy again. And so it puts up all kinds of roadblocks, the shlach kadosh. Okay? So with the next Sheva Brachas you speak at, this is what you can say. Okay. So that is the subject of women and Gilgulim.
Okay. Are you saying that the neshama can split or the neshama can multiply?
If you're understanding split in the sense of a split personality, no, it means multiply. They use the word split, like the way sparks split off of a fire, or the way. But it's not in a negative sense. It's something perfectly okay. The way you light a candle from a candle. Mashiach. So we already mentioned his opinion is that Mashiach will have the neshama of David HaMelech. Okay. Hoshana Rabbah, Noshanos, which I have to admit I never noticed because I'm just busy trying to keep up with Chazan. There's a line in one of the last Hoshanos, Kol Mavaser, or the last Hoshana. Semach Tzemach ish tzemach shmo. A man sprouted. His name is Tzemach. That refers to Mashiach. Tzemach is one of the names of Mashiach. Hu David be'atzmo. He is David. This Hoshana was written by Rabbi Eliezer Kalir. We don't know who he was. Some say he was a Tana from the time of the Mishnah. Others say he was from the time of the Gaonim. Others say he was the time of the Rishonim. A very early source in any case, and we sometimes even learn halachic opinions from the wording of his. He wrote a good part of the Yom Kippur davening, the Slichos, the Hoshanos, and his wording is assumed to be very precise, and as I said, we sometimes even learn halachos from his wording. So he says, Mashiach hu David ba'atzmo, he is David. So that is one opinion. But sometimes we find Mashiach referred to as Ben David, suggesting he's not David himself. And the Gemara implies that, as I say, that David and Mashiach will be there side by side at the end of days. So those are the two different opinions about that. I mentioned yesterday a Rishon by the name of Rav Nachum Ricanti. Lived in Italy in the 1300s, and he says, as far as the question about women, he says, we need a received tradition for this. I can see arguments both ways. One argument I mentioned is there's no yibum for women, so that suggests they don't need to come back. Okay. On the other hand, women have free choice too, and they can sin too, so maybe they do need to come back. We would need a tradition to answer this question. We don't have a tradition to answer the question, so we won't answer the question.
We're not implying that the only Gilgal is through Yibum, are we?
No.
Okay.
No, that's... The purpose of Yibum is Gilgul, but that is not the only purpose of the only situation which there is Gilgul. There is a question which Yitzi has alluded to a number of times. Are all the neshamos today Gilgulim? or are there still new neshamas today? And the consensus of most of the svarim that I looked at is that the overwhelming majority of neshamos that are out there today are Gilgulim, but not all. And the Levush, great 16th, early 17th century Posek, who also wrote a commentary on the Rikanti, he says, how can you tell if someone is a Gilgul or not? So we saw that Barbanel said his child prodigy is probably a Gilgul. The Levush says that if you see somebody who is successful in spiritual matters and successful in physical matters, everybody likes him, and so on. Basically, everything seems to go well for him, then he is most likely not a Gilgul. Doesn't seem to have anything, any challenges. I mean, he still has Bechira, but he doesn't have any of the natural challenges that we're born with, and that suggests that he's not a Gilgul. What degree of everything going right doesn't address that. We don't really have a need to know in any event. Or maybe we do. The Shlach Kadosh says that at least some people knew they were Gilgulim. There's a Tana Ben Zoma, Ben Azai. I forgot if he says it about Ben Zoma or Ben Azai. He never married. Okay. Both of them never married. How can he says, I love Torah. I just need to learn all the time. Some say he did marry, but he couldn't be married because he just was learning every single waking moment, and he got divorced. Some say he married Rabbi Kiva's daughter, if it's Ben Azai. How does a person have that right? It's a mitzvah in the Torah. You get married and have children. Shlach says he knew he was a Gilgul. He already fulfilled that mitzvah in a prior life. One of the purposes of Gilgul is so that through all the lives that a person has, he can fulfill all 613 mitzvahs. He felt that in a prior life he was lacking in learning Torah. He fulfilled the mitzvah of having children. This life he was just going to learn Torah. So if a person, only a Tana most likely could know such a thing, but if a person could know that, apparently he would have that right to act on that information. Okay. And again, I said something in someone's name that I should have said in someone else's name. It wasn't the Radvaz who said that Gilgul is three times in 1,000 generations. It was Rikanti who said that. Okay. If you look at many tombstones in Europe. It's not the Radvaz who said that Gilgul is up to three times in 1,000 generations. It's the Rikanti who says that. Many tombstones have at the very bottom the letters Taf Nun Tzadi Beis Hei. Stands for Tehei Nafsho Tzura Mitzor HaChayim. Comes from a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, and that is a tefillah that the person buried there should not come back as a Gilgul. May his soul be bound up in the binding of life, meaning of eternal life, and not need to come back as a Gilgul. Well, not necessarily. At the very least, it means that the person didn't complete himself. So even he could have been a tzaddik and he didn't complete himself. So therefore, we're saying, God, please view this person as if he completed himself and doesn't need to come back.
Having the time, opportunity to complete yourself is a great gift.
Yes. Yeah. We said that repeatedly. We said that repeatedly. It's God's kindness that He allows the neshamas to come back and complete themselves. Okay. There's a sefer called Minchas Yehuda. It's a commentary, in a loose sense, on the sefer Mareches Elokus, which I mentioned before. And he says that, so as I mentioned, he's the one who says that there are three Gilgulim because there are four types of people. So the first life, plus three more chances, covers all the types you could have. And if you don't get it right by then, there's no point. Okay. As far as the question of 1,000 generations versus three times, he says 1,000 generations is for tzaddikim. People with tzaddikim who need to complete themselves, they will be given, not that they'll come back 1,000 times necessarily, but up to 1,000 opportunities to complete themselves. Rishayim, who need to come back as a punishment, okay, or to fix their, or to be cleansed of their averos, for three times is for them. So it's talking about different people. Okay. So he says that regarding the question of who comes back, the first life or the first, does the neshama come back in Tchias Mesim with the first body or the last body? So according to the Barbanel, he said that it's the, Barbanel says it's the first body. Rav Yehuda Chayat quotes a Zohar, which implies that it's the last body that comes back. He says, I don't understand this because, for example, we say that the 10 martyrs, the Sar Harugi Malchus, were Gilgulim of 10 of the sons of Yosef. So you're telling me that Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, and Yosef will not be present at Chias HaMesim. Only Reuven and Binyamin from the sons of Yaakov will be present, and the neshamos of the other 10 will be present in the neshamos of Rabbi Kiva and his colleagues. Very hard to accept. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There's a Zohar or other early source that he quotes, I think it's a Zohar, that now their lives overlapped. But after Avram died, his neshama went into Yitzchak. After Yitzchak died, his neshama went into Yaakov. So only Yaakov will come back to Chias HaMesim, Avram and Yitzchak won't. Very hard to accept. So he says, I don't understand this Zohar, and it seems to me that it has to be, like we said, in the name of the Radvaz and the Ramchal. Obviously, the Ramchal is hundreds of years after. He doesn't quote the Ramchal or the Radvaz. They came after him. But he said the same idea, that the neshama will split itself up in some way, and everybody who shared the same neshama will come back at Chias HaMesim. I want to end with a halachic nafkamina, halachic consequence of this whole discussion. Tshuva of Nodeb Yehuda lived in the 1700s. He was asked a question about a baby who was buried. Baby died and was buried without a bris milah. Should they exhume the body and do bris milah? So first he says, his conclusion is, in part it depends on how long ago the baby was buried, because it's not certainly not covered on mace if it's been a while, you know, too long, and it would be degradation to the body to see it in that state. So, but if it was just freshly buried, he says, then it gets into another question. There's something called cherdas hadin, the trembling of judgment. When a body is disturbed in the grave, it thinks it's being taken to judgment again, and it's a terrifying experience. And so if you say that, well, it was a baby, so it didn't sin and won't be judged, so it's not afraid of cherdas hadin, not worried about it, so no reason not to exhume it. However, according to the Mekubalim, and he says, and the philosophers agree with this too, that there is Gilgul Neshamos, then even a baby would have cherdas hadin. It would think it's being judged for its prior Gilgul. And therefore, And therefore, that would be a consideration in answering the shaila of whether it should be dug up. On the other hand, you could argue that if it's going to be judged, it certainly would be better off being judged in a state of having a bris milah than in a state of not having a bris milah, because that's another strike against it if it doesn't have a bris milah. And therefore, his conclusion is that if it was just freshly buried, it should be dug up and a bris milah should be done. And if not, then it's too late and it should not be disturbed. So very surprising halachic appearance of this whole concept in a halachic context, which I thought was a fascinating way to conclude this subject. There is tremendous, tremendous amount we have not said, and I'm not qualified to say, but hopefully a little taste. And as of now, I am scheduled to be away for the next 2 weeks. God willing, you'll all daven for my case to settle today or tomorrow, so I will be able to be here next week. I will let you know. Otherwise, there'll be no shiurim until I come back.